Hospitals and care facilities like nursing homes are seeing the devastating effects of the coronavirus, which poses a particularly severe risk to the elderly and to those who are immune compromised. We know many people are concerned about people in their own lives. We know you're concerned about people in your lives who may fall into those categories, and some of you may even be caregivers for those people yourselves. So today we want to talk about what home health care and what home care looks like in this crisis. Later in the hour, we'll take your calls on this. The phone number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also send us a tweet at Radio Boston. First, we want to check in with someone who does this work every day for a living. With us on the line is Maria Colville, who is a personal care assistant from Cambridge. Maria, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Maria, how has this work been for you during this pandemic?
Actually, it's been a more of a fear factor with the consumers. So you have to be very creative. You have to be very fluid in your reactions and in what you do and what you don't do. You have to pay special attention, extra special attention to the climate, meaning the atmosphere that you're working in right now.
So are you saying that the people that you care for are afraid of you, that patients are afraid of personal care assistance because of what they may bring in, or afraid of not being able to get home health care because then they might have to go into institutional care?
A combination of those. The fact of the matter is the climate is one of fear. Fear for bodily harm, fear for not getting any help, fear for what someone coming in may bring, fear for even leaving a window open so you can get fresh air. You don't know if you're getting contaminants from outside coming in. So it's a climate of fear. That is the bigger problem even than the coronavirus itself.
Maria, are you afraid?
No, I'm not.
Why not?
I'm not afraid because I'm a skilled worker. I am someone who has been in the medical field for over 30 years. So I trust what I have learned. I trust what I have been taught. And not only that, I'm a faith-based person. I believe that the human spirit can endure and be victorious over anything that comes into our humanity. Humanity was built with resilience. We came fully loaded. Everything to conquer whatever comes our way is within us. So I see myself as a solution and not part of a problem. And therefore, there's no reason for me to fear.
If you don't mind, I'm going to hold on to and probably use again sometime in the future that idea that we come fully loaded. I love that.
Yes.
So are you working as much now, Maria, as you were before the pandemic? Are you seeing all the clients you have been?
No, I'm not. I actually just have one client right now. And the pandemic, as you call it, has created so much fear that people are making decisions they consider in their own best interest, and rightfully so if you're a consumer, because if you're worried about too many people coming into your home, then the risk is higher. So people are choosing, some consumers are choosing to have live-in help rather than hourly help. And so that is one of the major changes that has taken place. The other thing is that depending on where you live, if there are a number of people that have come down with the coronavirus, then you may have a quarantine status where you're not able to work with that client anymore. Or even if you as a PCA have symptoms, then you cannot go to work. You have to look at not just your own safety, but the safety of the consumer.
Before I let you go, Maria, I do want to ask you, what's your message to other people who may be sharing your experience, other health workers, or those who may have health workers supporting them in their homes?
My message to each and every caregiver that's out there is this. If you want to know what the cure for coronavirus is, stand before a mirror. You are the solution.
Maria Colville, thank you so much. Personal care assistant, I appreciate you joining us here on Radio Boston.
Thank you.
I want to turn now to Becca Gutman, Vice President of Home Care for the 1199 SEIU United Healthcare Workers East. Becca, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
I want to start just by inviting you to reflect on what you heard from Maria.
Yeah, I have to say that I'm very honored to be on this show with Maria. Maria is a strong leader in our union in 1199. I think her resilience and the resilience of home care workers really comes out in what Maria was saying. And I think Maria's message that fear is all around, that it abounds right now, is right on. And we've definitely heard that clients, that elders and people with disabilities are certainly scared of home care workers coming into their homes. We've also heard a lot of fear, though, from personal care attendants and from home care workers. And I hear the resilience in Maria's voice. And we know that home care workers are so committed to the people that they're caring for and the support that they're providing. But the truth is that a lot of home care workers are also really scared themselves, and rightfully so, without the equipment that they need. I mean, the expectation
so
right
Becca,
now.
So, Becca, let's get explicit about that. Do home care workers have personal protective equipment?
No, they don't. Right now, PCAs and home care workers are expected to go into people's homes without personal protective equipment. Our union is trying to fill that gap by trying to locate, you know, personal protective equipment, but we're filling a gap where the federal government has really let us down.
And are there things that could happen, like flexibility in the Medicare regulations, et cetera, that would make a difference and allow for better support of home health care workers as they continue to go into homes during this pandemic?
Sure. I mean, our union has been advocating for incentive pay, for hazard pay for personal care attendants. And as of April 1st, PCAs, unionized PCAs, are going to be getting a 10% increase. And I think that came about both because of the union's advocacy, because PCAs have been advocating, and because consumers and clients knew that without that pay bump, we needed an incentive so that PCAs could continue to go to work, so that clients weren't then forced into nursing home care, which we know is even more dangerous right now.
And what is the typical wage of a personal care assistant now, Becca?
It's for personal care attendants, for unionized PCAs, it's $15.40 an hour. And so it's going to be going up to $16.94 an hour with this hazard pay. But what we see in non-union agency, at non-union home care agencies, is that the home care workers there are often making just above minimum wage. And there's no mandated incentive pay for those workers right now.
Becca, in our last minute or so, do you think these workers have been forgotten or are being undervalued in the crisis? And what could we do differently?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a legacy of home care workers being forgotten and being invisible, frankly. I mean, home care workers are an incredibly important part of our healthcare system, and they've been invisible for so long. And I think, again, they're being made invisible during the COVID crisis. And I just want to say one more thing, which is that home care workers are often are among the communities that are being the hardest hit in the COVID crisis. They're from communities of color, immigrants. And so we need to make sure that we're addressing those racial disparities, paying attention to this important workforce right now.
That's Becca Gutman, Vice President of Home Care for the 1199 SEIU United Healthcare's Workers East. Becca, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.
We're continuing our talk about caregiving at home in the midst of the coronavirus crisis. And we want you to pull up a chair. Do you care for someone elderly or immune compromised at home? Or do you know someone like this whose health and safety you're worried about? What questions do you have about how you can keep them and yourself safe? If you're in a vulnerable population for this virus yourself, what are your concerns and how are you receiving care at home? Call us, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Or you can tweet us at Radio Boston. With us to share the conversation is Mindy Freed, creator and host of the podcast Shape of Care. Welcome back, Mindy. I not have Mindy yet. We'll see if we can get her back on the line. Also with us is Karen Wasserman, director of Your Elder Experts, an organization that specializes in assisting older adults and those living with chronic illness. Karen, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
And I think we have Mindy Freed now. Mindy, are you there?
I am here. Hi, Tiziana. Hi, Karen.
Hi.
Good to be here.
Good to talk to you. Thanks to both of you for joining us. I know we've already got some calls on the line, but I want to ask you a couple quick questions first. Mindy, you've been doing a special series of episodes on your podcast subtitled Caregiving in the Time of Corona. What does that look like for the people that you've spoken to for your podcast?
Well, you know, I'm really talking to people about their personal stories. And in some cases, I've gone back to people that I interviewed when the Shape of Care podcast was released, and just following up to hear what it's like for them now. And in one case, for example, a woman who was caring for her husband 24/7, who he had Parkinson's disease, and he passed away 2 months before the whole crisis, the pandemic hit. And so she's coping with her grief, having lost her husband. She had planned a memorial service, which has had to be rescheduled. And just, you know, I think after he died, she kind of felt like, okay, now I can kind of visit family and kind of get back in the world. And, you know, that's not happening. So that's just one example of, you know, the hardship. On the other hand, she had a book group and, you know, all kinds of other sort of social events that she was operating out of her, you know, online already. And so, you know, she has a lot of things going on in sort of a structure to her life. And, you know, I think you just had Maria Colville on the show, and Maria
yes.
was one of my guests as well.
Small world.
I spoke with Rick Serpin, who founded Cooperative Home Care Associates in New York, and talked about kind of the crisis in New York and how it's affecting home care workers and the families that they're devoted to and that they care for. And the episode that just came out today is an international perspective. I have people from researchers from Italy, Slovenia, Kenya, and South Korea talking about what's going on in their country in relation to care workers and the, you know, care people who are doing caregiving within families.
Hopefully we'll have a chance during this segment to hear a little more about that. That sounds quite interesting. I do want to turn to Karen for a minute. Karen, what are you seeing and hearing from the families that you're serving? What challenges are they facing?
I think the biggest challenge is making decisions about where they and the person they're caring for is going to be the safest. And there are really no perfect answers. People are struggling with, okay, I'm caring for my husband at home, but what happens if I get sick? I don't have a plan B. And how do we make plan B? And who would leave the house? And how would we make that happen? Families are dealing with their relatives who are being discharged from the hospital or a rehab setting, and they don't know where to go because a lot of the places they would normally go are closed to admissions. And going home is complicated. Coming out of a hospital, is it dangerous for the people at home that they're moving back into? If we would normally set up home care services, will I be able to find someone who I feel comfortable with coming into my home? I mean, I think Maria's comments were beautiful. You know, yes, people are fearful. And yes, there are these caregivers that are still at their work being incredibly gracious and diligent and putting themselves in a really complicated situation to provide the care that's needed. there are a lot of hard decisions and there are a lot of things to grapple with.
1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We want you to join this conversation with your own questions and experiences. We have Simone on the line from Malden. Simone, you're on with our panelists. What's on your mind?
Hello, Tiziana. Thank you so much for having me. And first, I would like to thank everyone who has spoken before you for everything that they have been doing for families. I myself have a 79-year-old mother at home with her own health issues. We are fortunate enough to live in Massachusetts, and we also have struggled with how to enter and leave our own home carefully, making sure that it doesn't become contaminated. However, my mother was recently admitted to the hospital with a lung infection. Luckily, that was it. After her discharge, however, we have been fortunate enough to have two personal care nurses who have been visiting our home twice a week. Sorry.
It's okay,
I can't tell you how invaluable they have been. One of my mother's nurses, Michelle, she and I, we spoke three times today on the phone. Every time I called her, if she wasn't available, she called me back immediately or picked up her phone immediately. And the information and the care and comfort that she's been able to give has just been invaluable. But also, she and I had a discussion, and she said, you know, that she believes that this is really the future of elderly care in Massachusetts. And luckily for residents in Massachusetts, you know, we have MassHealth, which is what Obamacare was based off of.
So Simone, I'd like to take it back from you there. I really don't want to cut you short, and I really appreciate the depth with which you shared. But you're raising some interesting issues about the future of everyone's experiences being like yours, and I want to turn to Karen and get some reaction on that.
Well, I think I appreciate that having someone come into your home who you can trust, who you can call is essential. And I think that the people who are struggling are those that are that don't have the kind of support, who are calling out to the same doctors and medical facilities that are completely overwhelmed right now. So having that nurse is really very special. And I could hear in your voice how special that is. I think that people are feeling...
Go ahead, Simone.
My mother was basically alone in her home in isolation because we were afraid to interact with her. But she's still a person who requires care and help just getting up and downstairs, getting into the shower, getting in and out of bed. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you before.
That's okay. You were welcome to, Simone. Karen, go ahead.
I think that what's going on in people's homes is that they have that struggle. How much help can they bring in from the outside? How much of a risk do they want to take? People want to get the care that they need, but now it feels like if they get the care that they need, are they putting themselves and everyone else in the home at risk?
And Mindy, are you here? I'm sorry.
I was going to say there's a lot of guilt.
Yeah.
There's a lot of guilty feelings from caregivers. Like, would it be their fault if something bad happens? I think
Mindy, are you hearing about that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm hearing a lot of stories. In some cases, where people have chosen to take an elderly parent or grandparent out of a nursing home, just to kind of back up, as you know, that a lot of nursing homes are no longer open to families, and so. Some families have made the decision to bring these folks back home, which then raises all the issues that we're talking about, you know, that Simone is referring to. You know, how do you keep things safe? In some cases, and I've heard this from some folks, where it's a woman taking care of a husband who is in the home, and there's without home care support, it's exponentially more difficult, because sometimes it's required to have strength and kind of manually move the person around. And in stories I've heard, sometimes the case is that the wife or the partner doesn't have the strength to do that, and doesn't have the stamina to deal with incontinence. And so there's some, I think, as Karen is saying, there's some very, very difficult and poignant situations. In other cases, there are families that are multi-generational. And so, the family itself is kind of like the pod,
I think we have a call about that, Mindy. So I'm sorry to interrupt you. We do have some callers on the line. I think we have one about that. 1-800-423-8255. We've got Tom on the line from Wrentham. Tom, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Tom. I was a kid with my father-in-law in my house and my mother in her own house, and we had professional caregivers do. And the fear of my mother and my father-in-law were not illness or injury. It was fear that they would be taken out of the home and be put in a nursing home, or that they would be given medications against that they didn't want. So they would hide symptoms. When they had the flu, they would hide it. When they fell down, they would hide it. If they were incontinent, they wouldn't tell anybody. If they paid a bill that they shouldn't have paid, or got an advertisement and they bought something that they thought they shouldn't, they would hide those things. And so with the current virus, the risk is that they'll hide them and they'll be much sicker before they get help. And they'll because they hide them, expose people to that more virulent illness before they get help too. So the fear is a big thing, but it's not just fear of the illness. It's fear of loss, their life, their independence.
Karen and Mindy, I would assume, Tom's making such a strong point there. I would assume, given the fears people have about going into nursing homes here in the Commonwealth, we know the testing and the amount of the infection rate that we're seeing in nursing homes, I imagine that's compounded in the current circumstances.
Mm-hmm. I think that people in general, even before the coronavirus appeared, want to protect their independence. And now it's protecting their lives. So the thought of going into a nursing home now is obviously not, it's much worse than it used to be. And yet some people need to go in. So it is a conundrum about where to go. How do you figure out what is safer? The nursing homes, even the good nursing homes around here, are barely able to tread water. They're devastated. I can't imagine the levels of devastation going on. The caregivers who are not able to be there because they're sick themselves, the families that are being kept separate from one another and cannot provide the support that they want to. It is a really horrendous situation, and yet some people need that kind of support. You need to be in a nursing home.
Let's get another call. We've got Neil. No, it's okay. We've got Neil on the line from Swampscott. Neil, go ahead.
I have a spinal injury, so I had home care coming in. And the home care provider, a woman, she's got a family, and we mutually agreed to stop it for the time being. Now, the company that she works for, and I think this is a very important point, they don't let anyone work more than like 30 hours a week, so they don't give any sick time or any health insurance help or benefits whatsoever. Mm. And they're actually contracted through Mass Health and to provide services. And I really think it's wrong to have people who are going in to provide health services, and are they getting their immunizations? Do they get a yearly checkup? In addition, her fear, she's got three kids and a husband, her fear is that she's going to go into an elderly person's or someone disabled person's home and get the virus. She has no protective PPE, no mask, no gloves. Mm-hmm, she's got gloves, but no mask. So, you know, that's a big problem because I really think that without having any paid sick time, then what if when I canceled at the agency, they said, well, we can send you somebody else. Well, first of all, I don't want somebody else I don't know. And
that kind of misses the point, doesn't it, Neil?
Right. And how do I know if the person coming here doesn't have maybe had symptoms, but they couldn't afford to be out sick because they wouldn't get paid?
Yeah. Neil, so I'm going to take it back from you there. I sure appreciate you calling in and sharing yet another story. I mean, we know. I mean, Neil's is a complicated situation, Mindy. I know you're talking a lot with people who are caring for loved ones at home. These complexities, they can only be exacerbated now, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate Neil's perspective. It's very, very challenging. And I think what strikes me is that the work that home care workers or direct care personal care attendants or nurses, whatever, are doing is it's an essential service. You know, the care work that's keeping us going and has traditionally been kind of invisible work, not recognized, not, remunerated in the way it should be. And, you know, in talking with people from all these different countries, I heard similar stories. For example, in Italy, which has the oldest population of any country in the world. So these workers are central in providing older adults and families with care services that they otherwise wouldn't be able to get access to. They're considered essential workers, but they don't have access to unemployment benefits. So, you know, some of the things that Neil was talking about in terms of just what the agency can provide, that's one side of it. But, you know, what can government provide? The woman I interviewed or that I spoke with from Seoul, Korea, said that the government of Seoul is now issuing protective equipment to all the workers who work in institutions and in homes. And so I think that we need to, it's hard when you're in a crisis to get to that level of demanding, but I think that we do need to expect more from our state and local and federal governments in terms of what they can do to keep people safe because, you know, this is what's keeping us going.
Let's take another call. We've got Joan on the line from Wakefield. How are you, Joan?
Good. Yeah, I was just calling in because I am a manager of a private agency that staffs caregivers through the ASAP network, which is the state agency that takes care of, you know, all the frail and low-income elderly people. And I know that there's been some conversation about pay rates for our staff. And yes, 100%, I totally agree that they're not paid enough. But the problem is that the state and federal government don't put the money back into the network. We haven't had a rate increase in over 12 years. Can you imagine running
a business
that you're...
You don't get an increase in reimbursement rates and you rely on those.
The home health aid rate, which is the rate that I get paid, and then, you know, I pay my staff and I pay my nurses and I pay all the, you know, the people in my company. We haven't had a rate increase in 12 years. Home health aid rate, that's the people that are nursing home eligible. They are people that would be in a nursing home. That's the care level that they need. And that's what my people are going out there to do. And my people do not have, they don't have the luxury of being in a hospital or a nursing home where if they get in over their head, they can ring a red button and a nurse comes out to help them. Or they have a second person that comes to help them. They walk into homes where there's hoarders or there's smoking, there's pets, there's family members. I mean, my staff have walked into homes where people have overdosed in the house, and they are the lowest paid of all of the caregivers in this state, and the state does not put the money back in. So I don't,
Thanks for that, Joan.
They keep giving money back to some of the PCA programs, but they're not giving it to the ASAP network.
Thanks for that, Joan. I appreciate that. Karen, let me ask you to react to Joan there.
Well, I think it goes back to what Becca said earlier in the show about how these people are invisible, that she and her organization and the unions are really fighting that they get the respect, the monetary reimbursement that they are lacking. For some reason, the people who are doing this work, this really hard work, get paid the least and somehow get missed in the whole scheme of things. They don't get the protective gear. They're really doing amazing work. They're going in, just as Marissa said earlier, they're going in because this is what they're due. This is what they do. This is what they're trained to do. And they're at risk. They're in some way being, scrutinized because maybe they're going to bring in the virus. And yet they're going in and providing a service that most people could not live at home without. It is a very complicated and difficult situation. And these workers never get reimbursed what they really should.
Let me turn back to Mindy. We've only got about 2 minutes left. Mindy, I want to get your reflections as well and any other thoughts that you want to share.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a moment where we really need to challenge ourselves to think about silver linings. And I think as a number of people have said, this is a workforce that is typically invisible and has been for decades now. And yet now, given this pandemic, we are much more acutely aware of the value of this work and the necessity for this work. And so, if I were to put on my hat of optimism, which is a little hard to do in these times, I think I would just hope that this greater understanding of the needs, the need for this workforce and the essential role that they play in keeping our society kind of functioning. It's the home care workers, it's the people who work in institutions, it's hospital workers, it's people who are first responders. These are the folks that keep us safe and protected, and we need to really think about how to take this understanding and challenge our government, both the local and the state and also the federal government, to value not just in words, but in actual, pay and reimbursement and all the kinds of issues that are coming in here. And there's a lot of people who've been thinking about these issues as policy issues. How can you float more money towards those
Mindy,
workers?
I'm gonna have to take it back from you there.
Yeah.
Sorry to cut you off. That's Mindy Fried, creator and host of the podcast Shape of Care. Mindy, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure. Thanks a lot, Tiziana.
And Karen Wasserman, director of Your Elder Experts, an organization that specializes in assisting older adults and those living with chronic illness. Karen, I appreciate it.
Thank you.